Welcome to Hype episode 123. I've been waiting for so many weeks to say that. I'm so stupid. My name is Selena and I'm joined by Pam and Merima today. Yay!
Yay!
Pam, there is another voice here.
Hello.
So nice to talk to you guys. It's been, about 5 minutes.
Way to ruin the illusion.
This
is our podcast marathon day.
This is our podcast marathon. Yeah, this has been pretty crazy. Me and Pam have been recording for hours and hours. This is our third and final podcast of the day because we will be bringing you...
Third and final podcast ever. We're done.
Yeah, of the day. It's over.
It's just going to be the Merima show. You guys have had enough of us, so...
I love it. Wait, no responsibility.
For 3 months.
Pass.
Yeah, while we go to the Bahamas and have a break. But we have been doing some specials that we will be bringing to you. First of all, the Fantastic Beasts special is coming to you because we know that you guys are all very anxious to talk about the movies and we have a bunch of your feedback and we share our own predictions and thoughts and comments and all that. Then we have, of course, the Gilmore Girls season 7 special because we made it just in the nick of time and that's going to be out before the revival premieres on Netflix this week. And then, of course, we have some more stuff coming your way. We have a kind of some interviews that are going to be very fun. I don't want to say anything. I'm always very, very scared about jinxing it, but I will say, because I have time to cut it out, that the 100 fans should be particularly excited about something coming up later this week. So definitely stay tuned for that.
So much fun.
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot of fun stuff coming to you from Hype, and we hope that you guys enjoy all of that. And anything that you want to comment on, whether it's anything we talk about in this show, if it's any of our specials, anything you want to suggest that we talk about, you can do that in one of several ways. You can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com, and leave us a comment in the podcast post. You can find us on Twitter at hypeablehype, on Instagram at hypeablehype, on Tumblr at hypepodcast.tumblr.com, and of course via email, which is hype@hypeable.com. So please get in touch with us using any of those ways and we will get back to you, and we're very excited to hear from you. Now moving into how we hype, which is where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. So once again, our Fantastic Beasts special is coming very shortly, so we're not going to talk about that at all this week. This is a Fantastic Beast-free zone.
Also, I haven't seen it, so no spoilers.
Also that, yeah. So to protect Merima and any other unspoiled listeners, then we're keeping
this completely out of the show. Don't be
worm-taily. Oh, no, too soon. Apparently, we have a bad record of doing that this week. Whatever. Twitter accidents happen. But, I mean, this week has been, especially for me, and I know Pam, because Merima hasn't been on for a few weeks, she has a couple of things to talk about as well. I have a lot of things to talk about because I attended this exhibition, like movie exhibition event this past week where I got to see a lot of movies. Some of them have already come out in America and are just slow to arrive in Denmark, and some of them are actually previews of things that haven't come out yet. So I really want to get into talking about all of those with you, but I'm actually going to let Merima go first with your first one because I think it's the most interesting.
Oh, okay. Well, I have a theater review this week for something different. I saw, when I was in New York a couple weeks ago, I saw Puffs off Broadway. It's Puffs, or its full title is Or Seven Increasingly Eventful Years at a Certain School of Magic and Magic. And it's basically Harry Potter from the perspective of Hufflepuffs. And it's really funny, guys. Like, I have to be honest, I was a bit skeptical. It's had really good reviews. It's had great reviews. You know, it's been playing for a while and it's just moved off Broadway to the Electra Theatre, which is where I saw it. But I went in there and it looked a little hokey and I was like, oh, okay. I was with my friend. She was like, what have you brought us to? I was like, look, you can bring wine into the theater, so it's not all bad. And then we started watching it and it was like hysterically funny. Like, I cried some of my eyeliner off. It was so funny. There's a lot of interesting things going on with this play. So basically what they have done is it's Harry's time at Hogwarts from the perspective of the Hufflepuffs. And they have added in this character of Wayne, who is an American kid who is like, finds out that he's magical. I think he's like English, but he's raised in America. And then he like he finds out, you know, it's real and you're going to school, and then he goes to Hogwarts, right? And so the first thing that they've done is they've combed through the Harry Potter books for every mention of a Hufflepuff, and they've included all of those. So there's a lot of things that if you're a Harry Potter fan, you're like, oh, that bit and oh, that bit, but they make them the center of the story. And then they've, you know, obviously Wayne doesn't exist as far as we know in at Hogwarts. So then they've added in a whole lot of other stuff. So it does feel like a proper story. It doesn't just feel like sort of little vignettes here and there. So it's really well done. But like, it's just so funny. I can't overstate this. As we know, I'm hard to impress. I think that's a fair thing to say, but it's really clever and it's very meta, and it riffs on both the books and the films. Like, for example, the actor who plays Dumbledore changes between years 2 and 3. Oh. And then they're like, what are you talking about? It's like the same person. And I think it starts off being a girl and then it becomes a guy. So like the change is even more obvious. Yeah. There's lots of things like that. Obviously Cedric plays a very big role in this as the kind of chief Hufflepuff. Mm. And the other, so that's one thing. And I can't say enough how funny it is. And their Harry especially is just phenomenal. Like, their Harry is played by a girl, and I don't want to give it away, but like her kind of mannerisms and everything is just, it's incredibly insightful in a really sort of satirical way to like Harry's character. So yeah, it's really fascinating. And then the other thing that's going on with this just briefly is also there's obviously like a copyright issue here, and they don't mention Harry Potter or like Hogwarts or, you know, anything that could be mildly like a copyright infringement. And the way that they get around that is very clever at times, and also just like fascinating. I don't really understand how they're allowed to do this, but hey, I'm not complaining because it's fantastic. But yeah, I would definitely recommend. So it's running in New York right now. It's at the Electra Theater. I think they're selling until January 1 at the moment, and tickets are really reasonable, especially for like Broadway. So if you're going to be around in New York over the holidays and you have time to catch this, I would definitely recommend it. In spite of the sort of remarkable way they've managed to get around the copyright, I can't imagine they're going to be like filming it or anything anytime soon. And it really works well as a live production. So yeah, I would definitely recommend checking it out. If you're a Harry Potter fan, this is like the perfect thing for you. And it's really ingenious. It's really, really funny. I really, really loved it. And I think you guys would really enjoy it too. So if you have the chance to go and check it out, definitely run, don't walk, and you won't regret it.
That's awesome. I'm a big fan of a Harry Potter musical for pretty much all the reasons you said. I think the meta parody level is really amazing.
Yeah.
And so this I'm is very like, glad to hear that this is
yeah, this too. Is like heightened. Like it's, I mean, I like a Harry Potter musical as well, but I think that this is better executed.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah. They've like built on kind of what they did in that and been like, we can do all these other things. It's really clever.
Okay, so I attended this movie exhibition, and I got to see a bunch of films, and I'm gonna go very quickly over some of them. The ones I saw were A Monster Calls, Hidden Figures, and Arrival. And first of all, A Monster Calls, Patrick Ness wrote the screenplay for this. He's also the one who, he also wrote the book for it. He's also the one who's doing Class, the Doctor Who spinoff that I'm in love with, and he's an author of fantastic books, and he has proven once again that he can do no wrong, basically. And the movie is wonderfully brought to life by J.A. Bayona. I wasn't really sure what to expect from A Monster Calls because in Denmark, it's very much being promoted as a horror film. And, and I hadn't read the book and I didn't know anything about it. So I actually thought it was a horror film, like kind of The Ring-ish with like a legitimately terrifying monster and a really, really scary child. Obviously, it actually is a story about loss and death, and it's about this boy who's living with his terminally ill mother, and this monster, voiced by Liam Neeson, the mother is played by Felicity Jones, comes to visit him and tells him a bunch of stories that are illustrated in a way that's it's a lot like the illustrations for The Deathly Hallows, Tale of Three Brothers, in style, but with colors and he draws as well, and those visual elements are stunningly beautiful. The grandmother in the story is played by Sigourney Weaver, and we see this boy just sort of struggling to accept the impossible reality of his mother being incurably ill. And we see him dealing with grief in such a raw, just completely real way that I think, you know, obviously, like, human life, like, part of human life is that people die and that you have to go on, even though it feels like you can't. And especially from a child's perspective, losing, you know, the rock in your life, it's like, what the hell, like, how can life possibly go on from there? And it deals with some really deep issues of pain and loss and guilt and sadness and love and all of these different things. And I think that it's been a while since I've seen a movie that really felt like it had to be made, or that really sort of speaks to the human experience. Like, I think especially at the moment in Hollywood, like, we get a lot of, like, I don't know, just recyclings of stuff we've seen before, and big epic romps and sort of wannabe artsy indie films with a big budget. And that's the thing. That's what we get right now. And A Monster Calls is just so different and so much more rich and feels like it matters so much more than almost everything else except for one of the other films I have to talk about.
I'm so glad you liked it. Oh,
I can do nothing but recommend this film. It's so beautiful.
Have you read the? You should read the book.
I haven't read the book.
Patrick Ness is a genius, as I've said many mm-hmm. times. Now I'm so excited for this movie.
Yeah, you should be. Like, it's again, you know, I come into it not having read the book. I didn't know how it was going to end. I didn't know. At one point, I thought that the boy was, like, discovering an evil within himself, and that's what the monster was trying to draw out of him by showing those, like, where evil lies and stuff like that. But no, I just thought it was absolutely, absolutely beautiful. And I did not cry, but it's only because I was sitting next to someone that I work with, and I didn't want, but I heard him sniffle. But I was like, I can't do it. And I was, like, staring in the corner of the screen. But no, this movie just really captures something that everybody can identify with in some way or another. And it's very important. It's very important for art to address real human grief like this, you know? Moving on, I also want to say I saw Arrival, which was a much different experience. Maybe it's because I've already seen A Monster Calls. Arrival is the sci-fi film starring Amy Adams, and which is about these aliens coming down in these big pods, and Amy Adams has to work out how to communicate with them. And I know Pam saw it a week or two ago and had a really great review of it. And I guess I can sort of come with the counter to that, is that I didn't enjoy it that much. Like, I thought it was interesting, and I think she was good in the role. But I think at the end of the day, without giving anything away, I think this kind of fell into the same, I don't want to say trap, because a lot of people liked it, but it reminded me a lot of Interstellar, in the way that it chose to resolve this big conflict. Like, unlike something like The Martian, if you take the humor away, ultimately it's about science. I was expecting Arrival to be about science. At the end of the day, it was about, I don't know, a very simple love, like, human story, which is in a way fine, but I kind of felt like it didn't really hit the notes it was supposed to. And especially after seeing something like A Monster Calls, I just felt like it was a little bit of a, like, a cheap way of drawing emotion and quote-unquote shock, if you were shocked, out of its audience. And I wasn't super impressed. I feel like there was much more interesting things they could have done with the concept than what they ended up doing. And finally, Hidden Figures was the final movie I watched.
No spoilers.
And I don't, like, I literally, like, I'm, like, sitting here, like, I can't say anything because I don't want to spoil even what I felt about it. But this is a movie that you have to go see. Like, you just have to. And as I've already kind of said to Pam and Marima, like, this is obviously the movie Hidden Figures is about a group of black female NASA. They're called, like, computers. And they it was in the 60s, and they basically played an integral role in getting America to space. And as I was watching this in a group full of, like, professional movie people, the way that they, on me as well, like, reacted to the honest way in which the black community was subjected to everyday racism in the 60s, obviously, because as well, we know this stuff like this still happens today, but the way that it was so open and so, like, quote unquote normal, like, that was the way that the white people just treated them. And I'm just like, it was so shocking. And the reaction in my audience was obviously, because it's one thing to have it as part of your history. Denmark, we don't see this part of American history unless we go looking for it.
I was going to ask, like, is it not common for movies like this to make it over there? Because I feel like this isn't the first movie that has shown, like, how normalized racism used to be. I'm just curious, like...
No, because the thing is that what you kind of, you see is that the slave era, and then you see... Today, I mean, this kind of stuff. I mean, obviously, there has probably been more movies, but
I was going to say, like Malcolm X, like you know, like stuff like that. Like, I just kind of feel like there has been more. So, I was just kind of curious from like a cinematic, like outsourcing standpoint, if like it was uncommon for movies like this to make it over there.
I don't know how much, I mean, it is. I mean, I'm sure they don't all do, but I'm sure some do. But I think it's also just because it was so, like, the movie wasn't about that. Like, I know it was about that, but it was also just, I don't know, there was so much more going on. It was the way that it was presented. It was just very, very shocking, I think, to an audience that doesn't have that as part. I mean, we have other problems, believe me, but this is not a thing that has happened in our country, and it's not something that we are reminded of on a daily basis, that this happened somewhere in the world. So just getting, like, it was very shocking to people. And, you know, the movie ended with a huge round of applause. And I was just, again, I mean, I can't say if I liked it or not, but, you know, it's pretty obvious that I liked it. And I cannot wait for you guys to see it as well. And I kind of think that going off of this perfectly kind of lends itself to your next one, Merima.
Well, I'm reading the book. So, yeah, it does. I'm reading the book that Hidden Figures is based on. I bought it couple weeks ago now. God, I don't even know. The weeks are blending together, guys. I don't know. I bought it when I was in New York. The book is also called Hidden Figures. It's by Margot Lee Shetterly. And it's both great and frustrating. It's frustrating because it's not even written by a historian. So, like, I'm mad about that because it's so good. It's really, really good. And I would really recommend this to people. She's a writer. So the author was already a writer, and it's very readable. And if anyone has, like, been watching has just been watching the trailers on repeat and on repeat because their stupid country won't set a stupid release date, this is probably a good outlet for that, because I haven't finished it, not by any, nothing to do with the book, just to do with, like, a lack of time to sit down and read it, but I'm over halfway. And every time I read it, it's really well written. The historical figures are really well drawn, and you definitely get a sense of, like, who all these people are, and it deals with all of these issues, and it's just really interesting. I mean, it's like the first space program, and there were all these African American women who, like, first just were there in the first place in, like, eras of segregation, and were, like, integral in getting these programs working, and, like, in getting all of these milestones sort of happening, and it's fascinating. So, yeah, I think I read a lot of history books. This one is definitely a lot more readable than a lot of the stuff I read. It's really easy to digest, and the chapters are short, and the writing is really pithy. The people are so interesting. Like, they're all historical people, but they seem kind of like characters, because you just think, like, how is this person doing all of these things in their life? Mm. So, yeah, I would definitely recommend it. And depends on your perspective, I guess, on, like, if you would rather watch the film first because you want to kind of see what happens. I mean, I already know the story of what happened, so, like, I don't feel like I'm sort of ruining it for myself, but I feel like for some people maybe that would play into that. But regardless, like, great read. Would recommend.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I always say read the book before you see the movie, but this time the movie was just in front of me and I was like, I have to see it.
Well, I think it's a little different with historical things too, because, like, for some reason, even if it's something that's, like, already happened, sometimes you're like, well, I want to get, like, the cinematic experience, then I can go back and get all of the details of what happened, which I totally get. But what you should do is go and buy the book so that you have it and then you're ready to read it, like, as soon as you get out of the cinema, it sounds like, because you'll have to wait for the DVD.
Sure. For sure. Moving into some music, how we hypes. I know that Pam has one, and then Merima has a couple, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, I guess, do you want me to go first? Mine will feed into to Merima's first one, if that helps a little bit.
Yeah.
So I have been listening to music, surprise, surprise. But I was telling the girls before that I've actually been kind of trying to be better about sampling more hip hop and R&B and rap. And so I took a listen to A Tribe Called Quest's new album, which is called We Got It From Here, Thank You For Your Service. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with A Tribe Called Quest, but they're actually, they've been in the game for a really long time. They are a hip hop group that formed back in 1985. And the only song that I was familiar with by them is a song called Can I Kick It, which samples Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side. So they're very like melodic old school hip hop. And so if you're into that, like more than you are some of like the new rap that's out right now, you're really gonna like dig this. Unfortunately, this is actually their first album in 18 years, but it's also their last because they recently lost their third member, Fife, who died at the age of 45. So this was like a really nice send off. And they've always been a band that has not been afraid to rap and sing about social issues and the political climate. And that's very much what they're doing with this album. It's incredibly relevant to what's going on today. So if you like your music with a side of awareness and stuff to what's going on, this is definitely going to be right up your alley because it's a wonderful commentary on society and the political climate and where minorities fit in and all of that stuff. It's just so good. This album has been touted as one of the best albums of the year by many music publications that I like get my news from. And so I was a little hesitant to go into it because I was like, well, anytime somebody says that, I'm a little hesitant. But it really does live up to the hype. I think that I'm not sure if it's like the best album of the year, but it's really up there. It's just mixed incredibly well. It's produced incredibly well. And the lyrics are really poignant. There's a part in the song, The Killing Season, just to kind of give you guys a taste for what you can expect. A couple of lines go, marks and scars, we own it, only made for tougher skin, helps us actualize the actual greatness held within. Been on the wrong team so much I can't recognize a win, seems like my only crime is having melanin. So that kind of gives you a feel for the kind of stuff that they're singing about. And there's so many good songs on this album, you guys. I'm going to add some to the How We Hype playlist that I made a couple of weeks ago. So if you're following that on Spotify, you'll get notified when those go up. But yeah, really, really have been enjoying that. And it's just, I love that they were kind of, because they fused so many sounds into their music, I love that it has that old school melodic hip hop vibe. But at the same time, it also feels really modern and cutting edge. And it's just like a great final album for a band that has had so much history, and it was just really nice to listen to.
Awesome.
I've also been listening to hip hop Well, I've been listening to the Hamilton mixtape / the songs that are out from it already. I think you guys talked about this last time, but they've released in the last week, like two more songs have been released. One of them is Usher's cover of Wait For It. I prefer the original songs on here, like the songs that are kind of riffs on Hamilton versus the covers, I have to say. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm really familiar with the cast album, so it's kind of hard listening to, like, Sia does a cover of Satisfied, and it's, like, objectively great because it's Sia, but, like, it just sounds odd to me. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm really liking it, though. I think, you know, some of them need a couple listens. Usher's cover is fantastic, and I would recommend. So if you're interested in that, if you pre-order the album, there's already like six songs that you'll get from it, and they seem to be releasing a bunch all the time. I'm also listening to the new Two Door Cinema Club album on Pam's recommendation, actually, after I demanded some music to keep away from current events. This is their third studio album. It's called Game Show. It was released, I think, just in October. I love Two Door. Their last album was back in 2012, and this one is, like, it feels new for them. It definitely feels like they're continuing to transform and do new things. This one has a really sort of late 70s, early 80s vibe to it. There are some sort of Bee Gees moments in there, but there's a lot of synth, and it's really, really fun. I would definitely recommend it. It's a really solid album to listen to all the way through, and their songs are always really, really catchy, and just sort of regardless of the sort of content of the lyrics and things, like, they just write a really great hook. And so if you, like me, also need maybe a distraction from things, I would definitely recommend that. And I also just quickly want to shout out, I've been listening to in the last few days, Sharon Jones, who unfortunately died a couple of days ago. Sharon Jones, if you are not familiar with her, is like one of the greatest funk and soul singers, like, of all time, probably, but definitely recently. And unfortunately, we lost her to cancer at the age of 60. She was so young. But if you want to check her out, her band is Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, and they have like 1,000 albums, and they were alive band, so they would tour all the time, and that's kind of how they made their money. But she has like the most flawless voice, and if you're looking for something new, yeah, I would recommend checking her out, and this week is probably a good week to do that.
For my final thing, I wanted to say that I also got to, as part of this exhibition, got to see some stuff from Beauty and the Beast that hasn't been released yet. So I just thought I would kind of tell you in this voice, because I feel like you guys, listeners, and Pam and Merima, you deserve to know. I got to see some of the songs, which have not been released yet and probably won't be released for a while.
Which songs?
I got to see Gaston, some of Gaston, his song, which was incredible. Luke Evans and Josh Gad just obviously kill it, like you knew they would. And then I got to see some of the Bonjour song. I don't know what that's called. Is it just called Belle? I think it might be.
It's just called Bonjour.
The opening song?
Bonjour. 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 Yeah.
Is it Belle? I never knew that.
I think it's Belle. Huh. But I wasn't sure. I wasn't Bonjour. I thought like it was, first of all, I don't know, this might be wrong, but like I need to look up the lyrics. I feel like they changed the lyrics. Like instead of like, there goes the baker with his bread, no question. Like I feel like it was like his something else. So that caught me a little bit off guard. And I thought it was so wonderful. And I think the only thing that really had me disappointed was that Emma Watson sounds extremely auto-tuned in the clip that I saw. And I'm like desperately hoping that will not be the case in the final film. Because like the thing that I'm thinking about this, Emma Watson can sing. Like she's legitimately a singer who has had singing training. And the only reason, because the others don't sound auto-tuned at all. She's the only one. And the only thing I can think of is that she feels unsure, so she asked to be auto-tuned, because I know that sometimes happens in stuff like this. And I would just hate for that to be the case, because a slightly imperfect version of her really singing is going to be infinitely better than an obviously auto-tuned song. You know what I mean? Which this was. It was immediately obvious that it was an auto-tune, and I was like let down, because you can hear that she can sing beneath the layer of, you know?
Oh, no. That's the worst. So,
yeah, that also, was the worst.
Also, like, it's not, I mean, no offense, but, like, it's not the hardest. It's not Sondheim, you know? Like,
exactly. Alan Menken writes so singable weird
music. You don't need to be an opera singer to be able to sing these songs well.
No, exactly. Like, it was, everything about it was so strange, especially because coupled with the other stuff, like, she was the only one. Every other singer sounded totally natural, and she was the only one. So that's why I'm thinking, like, maybe they're just not done mixing it. Like, that's what I was, like, desperately hoping for. So, I mean, we'll have to wait and see. But that was everything else I saw looked fantastic. I got to see some of the actors, like, the actors playing the furniture in the costumes that they will have when they are people. And that was amazing. And everything about it just looks so incredible. And like the one thing that I have that I'm like desperately afraid of is the autotune. So yeah. Okay, so this is a good place to move into the news, which opens with, I think, we don't have a lot of news this week, but this is definitely worth our time.
Yeah. I mean, there's no news, but this is news. The rest is whatever. We have a Beauty and the Beast trailer, you guys, and we actually get to see them. So this is the first full-length trailer. We get to see Emma Watson. We get to see Dan Stevens. We get to see kind of a bit of a... Have you guys seen... This is tangential, but have you seen that thing someone put together where they matched up, like, shot by shot the movie and the trailer? It's incredible. Yeah, so a lot of these shots are, like, kind of stolen from the original animated feature, and it looks really cool. We also get a whole bunch of dialogue from the various furniture people, I guess that's fair. And we also see some of the sort of iconic moments of like them dancing, and we see the library, and like we kind of see a little bit of everything, which I guess makes sense because it's not like they don't have to worry about spoiling it, like everyone's seen Beauty and the Beast. Look, I have one major issue with this, but before I say that, I would like to know, I guess, how you guys felt about it.
I liked it. I saw it in front of Fantastic Beasts when I saw the movie the second time.
Oh, how was it on the big screen?
It was really cool on the big screen, like, because I think it gives just like an added element to the idea of this movie. I think we've said before in the past, like, at this point, like, Jungle Book has literally completely, like, opened my mind to the possibility of what Disney can do with live action. So I'm just, like, anything they want to throw at me. I think the only one I'm, like, still on the fence on is, like, the Winnie the Pooh live action. But anything else,
oh,
I'm like,
yeah.
Bring it. Bring it, Disney. Because I really, like, Jungle Book just completely, like, made me turn a new leaf. And I'm excited about it. I think that it did, like, even before, like, everybody started splicing, like, the original trailer and, like, the new trailer together, I think most of us saw, like, the similarities, like, or realized the similarities and stuff. And in a way, I kind of like that they did that, because if they're going to switch things up, I would rather, like, be surprised when I watch the movie than see them in a trailer. So,
yeah,
that was fine for me.
I just, like, is it just me, or is this a little bit too much beauty and the bestiality? Because he's just too much of not a person for me.
Oh, you think they went too true to the cartoon?
Yeah, I think they did. Oh, interesting. It makes me, I'm just like, look, I can get behind, look, Beauty and the Beast has a lot of issues. I'm going to just ignore the Stockholm Syndrome thing. I'm going to ignore the, like, abusive relationship thing and the, like, basically kidnapping her and et cetera. I'm going to try and just be like, it's fine. It's whatever. But, like, I have to look at him and he just looks too much like an animal. And I just am not sure if I'm down for that in a film. Like, I was very distracted every time I saw him in the trailer. I was like, oh God, that's what he looks like. And then all the rest of it looks amazing. But yeah, is that just me?
Do you think they should have done more like do you remember that movie Beastly, which was also based on a book that was a retelling, and he just kind of had a weird, like, head with a bunch of tattoos and, like, some horns coming out?
Well, I don't remember, like, that movie, but I'm now Googling it. And no, I don't think they should have done that, because that looks terrible. But I'm wondering,
like, how, like, if you had an idea as to how they could have gone about it differently, because, like, I get what they were doing. They wanted to make it true to the animation, but
I guess
what my problem is with it?
Yeah.
Is I don't like the look of the beast, and I can't really explain why. And maybe I disagree with Merriman. I don't really realize that's what it is, but I feel like, and I said this last time too, like, the beast in X-Men, if he was brown instead of blue, like, that's the same. It's the same. It's exactly the same. It's like, it's so weird. It's like, I don't know. And I get that they wanted it to look like the cartoon, but I almost feel like it's too clean. Is that the right word? Like, it's too, like...
Well, he does look incredibly, like, it doesn't look as lifelike as I would have wanted him to. Like, it definitely, you can tell it's mostly CGI, which is odd.
Right, and it's just, he almost looks like, it looks like he's not really there, basically.
Yeah, maybe that's part of it.
And I think there was a couple of shots, that they did it better with than others, but it just, and again, this might be fixed by the time it gets to the cinema, but compared to the surroundings, he looks slightly too clean, he looks slightly... like he doesn't fit in, and it is very hard to explain, but even looking at pictures and stuff, it's like his head is photoshopped on, and I find that a little bit distracting.
Yeah, I think for me it's a combination of that, and also just like he's just too much of like a beast, like it's to the point where I find it distracting when I'm looking at them. But I think it's also it's kind of that Hobbit thing where, like, anytime there was a CGI person, you're like, oh, that's
you
a green screen
person. You can see
it's
a CGI person.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, and almost, obviously in Beauty and the Beast, like, it is more of a cartoony feel. So maybe when we see it on the big screen, that will actually feel okay. But compared to something like Jungle Book, again, like me and Pam were talking about, like, the beauty of Jungle Book was that it all looked so real.
Yeah.
Like, it legitimately looked, it was flawless.
Yeah, I totally agree. Look, I think as much as it could, the trailer looks really encouraging and people are definitely very excited about it. And the things that kind of are giving us pause, I feel like we probably won't know until we see it on the big screen and see how it works together. Sure. So it's not like I'm not going to go and see it, but I've just, you know, I had to take a minute.
I will say again, just to the trailer, I thought it was beautiful. And I will say that in the footage that I saw, there was a shot of Belle reacting to the library, which is probably like my favorite thing in the whole world. Like that is going to be like, I'm just seeing it for her love affair with the library, basically.
Oh, yeah. Fair. I can't wait for all the gifts very of that.
I know. So moving on now to our next story, the Star Wars anthology film about Han Solo has added an actress, and it's not who we thought it was going to be. They have added a Game of Thrones star, Emilia Clarke, in a key role. She'll be starring opposite Alden Ehrenreich and...
Wait, what?
Donald Glover. Yep.
What happened to the other people?
Well, the thing is that we have, before we freak out, like this is, she's not necessarily, because we reported a few weeks ago that three actresses were in contention for the lead role, and they were Zoe Kravitz, Tessa Thompson, and Naomi Scott, who are all actresses of color, obviously, and this is incredible. I don't think that Emilia Clarke has taken that role. I think this is a different role.
Okay.
But if it is this role, then obviously that is going to piss everyone, including us, off a lot. But I think before we sort of react too strongly about it, I think we should, I mean, it's very possible that it's a different role, and this lead character has yet to be cast, because we don't know who she's playing.
Okay.
We only know that she's going to be starring in the movie.
I mean, I'm fine with her casting. When I first heard that, I think I probably had the instinctive reaction that maybe you had, which was like, wait, did she replace the actresses of color? In which case, like, they could not have possibly chosen a whiter person to do that. And if that is what has happened, I will be furious about it. But, like, if she's in the movie, that's great. I love her. And
I do too.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see how that goes.
And I think that's again, like let's cross that bridge when and if we get there.
Right.
But I think as
we'll
for
say about Emilia, outrage.
As for Emilia Clarke in general, I think she's so great on Game of Thrones, and I think she's sort of had some unfortunate involvement in certain movies, like Terminator, first of all, which was terrible, and then Me Before You, which was terrible for different reasons.
Oh yeah.
So I kind of feel a little bit bad for her, and I'm kind of happy that she's finding herself in what is hopefully going to be a really good movie and a really beloved franchise. And I hope also they let her keep her British accent this time.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, all signs point to this being a good thing, and we'll have to wait and watch out for the hopeful announcement of either Zoe Kravitz, Tessa Thompson, or Naomi Scott in the actual lead female role.
Stay tuned.
Interesting. Well, we have a little bit more movie news coming up here. We finally have a release date for A Wrinkle in Time, which of course is Ava DuVernay's highly anticipated adaptation of Madeline L'Engle's novel, and they kind of
our favorite book we hasn't
yeah
haven't
our
read
favorite
yeah
book
I gotta read that
read.
Book
yeah
is well, Mindy Kaling in the book too, or
we're maybe gonna do a special maybe we'll see.
Sure.
Well, they were very clever in the way they decided to do this. Everybody of course has been getting in on the mannequin challenge, which has been sweeping the internet and all corners of the world, and they decided to do the mannequin challenge with 102 crew members and 27 departments to announce the release date. So now we know that we can expect this movie to come out on the big screen on April 6th, 2018, which means that we have lots and lots
of
time,
time
to read this book, you guys.
Well, that's
we
special.
We can go chapter by chapter.
Yeah. We can commit to that special. Everyone will have forgotten.
they are currently filming the movie. They started filming on November 3rd, so they're definitely well on their way. But just a reminder, this movie has a wonderful cast. So if you, like us, have not read the book, then you should be excited for all the people that are going to be in this, including Mindy Kaling, who is all of our heroes, and Reese Witherspoon, Chris Pine, Michael Pena, Rowan Blanchard, who I love from Girl Meets World. It's just like so
Oprah?
Many cool
is an Oprah in this?
In this? Oprah, yeah. yeah, so there's a lot of cool people in this.
Nice. Okay, well, let's move from movies to TV. And something that is moving from movies to TV is Inhumans. Marvel has announced that we can expect an Inhumans TV series. And I guess this is now replacing the film that was slated. There was a film slated for Phase 3 of Marvel's Cinematic Universe. Then Spider-Man bumped it back. It was meant to be in 2019. Then I think the Indiana Jones movie bumped it back. Then they were saying maybe it'll be in Phase 4. Now it looks like we're getting a TV show, and I think I think this means the movie is dead, I'm assuming, at this point, unless anyone knows anything to the contrary. But basically, it's still kind of a film. So the way it's going to work is they are making a TV series, but Marvel has teamed up with IMAX, and in September 2017, they're going to play the first two episodes as a feature film in IMAX. So you'll be able to go and see that. And then the rest of the series is going to air on ABC, which is, of course, where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. airs. So, like, that's a bit weird. I think it's a bit weird. But I guess this is Marvel just, like, trying to, you know, get promotional stuff for their new TV show and maybe give something to those mm-hmm. fans who are excited for the Inhumans film. I don't know. Inhumans is very niche.
Is this going to include people from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, I don't know. They haven't announced anything yet. But, like, I mean, obviously Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been dealing with this kind of Inhuman storyline mm-hmm. for a while now. So I am very curious because I think people were thinking, oh, when the Inhumans film debuts, maybe there would be some crossover.
Daisy Johnson on the big screen.
Yeah, maybe there would be some crossover there. Or, you know, I mean, even if we select the kind of original Inhumans, like, who knows? But there would definitely be room for crossover. Now it's like, maybe there will be something. We actually, like, haven't heard really anything about it. They just say that it's going to explore the new stories of the Inhuman royal family and Black Bolt. So that's all they've said about it. And we don't know if there's going to be, like, how it's going to tie in. I guess I would be surprised if it doesn't tie in some way because, like, you know, they crossed over Agent Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, and obviously all of the Netflix properties, like, Marvel likes to keep things connected. And the TV, they seem to like to keep their TV universe, even though it's the same universe, separate from their MCU. So I imagine at minimum there's going to be some connection to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But I guess we're kind of just waiting and seeing now. They're basically just talking about, they're like promoing their sort of the deal that they've struck with IMAX at the moment. And they haven't really given many details on the actual show. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to wait and see, and I'm curious to see if this will ever come out over here.
Yeah.
but moving, staying in the TV realm, we also have a little bit of news of The 100. Yay! It finally has a release date. So all The 100 fans, listen up. The season 4 premiere will air on Wednesday, February 1st at 9 p.m. on The CW. So it's been a very long hiatus and I am very excited for it finally to be over. Although now it's kind of like a little bit of pressure because I do kind of want to rewatch it all before season 4 starts. I'll see if I get around to that. Who knows? But February 1st. Okay.
We should do 100 specials.
Oh my God, that would be so much fun. Like, don't even joke about that.
I'm not committing to that. I'll read all of the Wikipedia recaps. I'll read all of your recaps. How about that?
Yeah, thanks. but anyway, I'm very excited we finally have a release date and the trailer is supposed to be coming very soon. So who knows? I'm very excited.
Well, speaking of trailers, we did get a new trailer for Netflix's upcoming adaptation of A Series of Unfortunate Events. I don't know if you guys are excited for this adaptation of Lemony Snicket's novels, you guys, but overall the fandom seems to be really excited, and I've seen the two trailers that they've released for this, and it just looks so good. Like, everything about this just looks like a book lover's dream. It just looks very true to the story. We get a great look at Neil Patrick Harris as the evil Count Olaf. We also get some great moments with the kids. It's just a really nice little taste of what's to come. And Netflix also released a nice poster for the upcoming series as well, featuring Count Olaf looking into the spyglass. And then you can kind of see the kids in like the eyepiece there. So all of these episodes are actually set to premiere on Netflix on January 13th. So just in time for the new year here, and we'll get 8 episodes in total. And yeah, I'm just like, I'm interested in this. I'm looking forward to checking it out when it finally premieres.
So. Do we know how much, like how many, is this just of the first book, or like, do we know how many books this first series covers? 'Cause isn't there like 13 of them?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's just the first one. No, oh, that, wow. I'm sure. I don't think so. I take that back.
I thought it must be more because, like, yeah, I think I've read the first 4 or something, 4, but I can't really remember them. But, like, there's definitely things in here that I was like, oh, I don't remember that from the first book,
and I've
which look really exciting.
Yeah, I've only read the first, like, I think the first 3 myself, so Because I think they came out like a little too late for me, and they're like, yeah, I just wasn't interested. So I read the first three, but then it was just hard for me to continue. But I did enjoy the first three, and I liked the movie that came out a couple of years ago. So this is going to be really fun, and it definitely looks like Neil Patrick Harris has put his own spin on Count Olaf, which is good because when you've already had like a really big actor play this role already, like you want to differentiate yourself. But I think he's going to do really, really well with this.
Oh, I think this looks great. I mean, I did not like the film. I really like the premise of these books. And this kind of has a sort of Wes Anderson vibe to it, I feel like. It kind of reminded me of, like, you know, Grand Budapest Hotel and things like that. And it just looks, I mean, it looks really fun. Like, I'm definitely not going to reread the books for this because, like, I'm not going to make any commitments. But, like, the show looks really great. And I think it looks intriguing even if you haven't read the books. You know?
Yeah, so, totally.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be another winner for Netflix for sure.
I definitely agree. And, you know, I know there were people who were thinking like, I mean, this is an interesting role for Neil Patrick Harris to play, but they definitely, you see in this why he has chosen it. Cause like he gets to play so many different roles in that one role. So it's a lot of fun for him.
And this trailer also, like, it gives us a little slice of what's to come for him. Like, he's dressed as at least four different versions of himself in this trailer. It's so cool.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. It's really, really good. I definitely keep an eye on that. Okay. And one last piece of TV news. We got our first looks at the adaptation of J.K. Rowling's Cormorant Strike series. So this is called The Strike series. And we got our first photos with the actors playing Cormorant Strike and Robin. So that's Tom Burke and Holiday Granger. And I don't love Strike. I think he looks too nice. He looks like attractive and... Yeah, I thought my sense from the books was that he was a little more, I don't know, kind of disheveled and like bigger and sort of like intriguing in a way, but not necessarily like conventionally attractive. And like this guy is very attractive in a kind of conventional sense, I think. But who knows? Do you guys have any opinions on these?
Not particularly. I still haven't read the books.
I haven't either.
Oh, really?
Holiday Granger.
Well, you haven't read the books? Great.
I don't think either of us have. Yeah.
What? Guys.
Are they worth reading?
Look, yes. The second one is great. The second one is really, really good. The first one is fine. I liked it fine. It was good. It depends if you like mystery novels. They are very straight up, like, detective mystery novels. They kind of follow that sort of format that you see in, like, Agatha Christie books and, you know, any sort of detective novel. Where like something happens and then, you know, there's clues and then there's kind of intrigue and like whatever. I did not like the third one because it deals like very explicitly with sort of violence against women. And like, there's just enough of that. I don't need to read about it, but she's working on the fourth one right now. I think it's meant to be out sometime next year, but yeah, I actually think cinematically it could work well. Like my issue really with them was, and people continue to be mad at me about this, but like, we all know that J.K. Rowling can write a great mystery because that's essentially what's at the heart of the Harry Potter books. But like, it just felt like these books kind of were missing the sort of whimsy and the dialogue and like all of those other things that make Harry Potter, that elevate Harry Potter above just being like a fantasy mystery. So like, these are fine.
That's how I never got through the first one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I will be excited to check out the TV show. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving into TV show of the week now, the only one who has something is actually Merrima. So why don't you give us TV show of the week?
Sure. My TV show of the week is The Mindy Project because they just aired the finale. And of course, this is over on Hulu now. So like, you got to go over there and watch that. I've still been watching it this season. And since I remembered that I really like it, I have continued to really like it. So that's good. Because it's like one of those shows that I kept forgetting that I was into. And then I would watch it and be like, oh, okay. So yeah, so the next episode is going to air in February, I think is when it's back. It was like the mid-season finale. And I really like what it's doing this season. It's kind of introduced some new characters and... without spoiling, like what happened in the finale was kind of a reversal of a lot of what we've seen happen in, in other episodes with Mindy's like various romances, and yeah, it's just really fun. I feel like on Hulu it's really found its feet and it's been able to sort of experiment and do some things that maybe would not have worked when it was on Fox. So we can take Fox canceling it maybe as like a small blessing in disguise. And yeah, if you guys need something fun, you've got plenty of time to catch up, because yeah, it's not back till February. So I would definitely recommend.
Fantastic. Okay, so we're going to wrap up with listener feedback, and we actually have quite a lot of it. So that is awesome. We're so happy to hear from you. And guess who gets to read the email?
Me! It's always me.
Yay!
So we have an email here from Sarah who says, "Hello, Hype. So I've been recently watching The Crown, and I spotted something really exciting and wanted to share it. In episode 4, one of the characters is learning to fly. Spoiler free. And there is a brief scene of a stately home in the background," and she also sent a picture. And then she says, "That stately home happens to be in the village where I work as a teacher. My school is just out of shot at the bottom of the screen. There's a small airport locally,
oh my God,
and in the summer, we always get lots of small planes overhead, but it just made me excited to think that I was probably teaching below them as they were filming this. Love the podcast and couldn't think of a better place to share my excitement than with you lovely people."
That's oh my so God. Nice.
That's amazing.
You're basically in the Crown.
Yeah. Add yourself to the IMDb page. As far as we
yeah,
can
your
next
request your paycheck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's like a SAG equivalent in the UK, but I'm sure there is.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So moving into our tweets now, we have a lot. Merima, why don't you start and we'll just go down the list.
Sure. We've got one from the Lady Ash who says, "If people need a TV show to help them feel better about the government," oh, what could you be referring to? "I suggest Parks and Recreation. It's my big comfort now." I've actually been doing the same thing, so would recommend.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. And Shauna Evans says, "Ewan McGregor for Dumbledore. Cocky and carefree. Now that I thought of it, I want this so badly. What do you think?" That's funny, Shauna, because that was another one that I put on my little list in my, like below everyone. I didn't want to play Dumbledore. I was like, oh, Ewan McGregor would be kind of cool. So I like that you thought of him too. Yeah,
his accent
why
is
not?
So bad in the Beauty and the Beast trailer. Is that just me?
Isn't he one of like the French?
He's the French
like,
one.
It is a girl. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's so bad. But in a fun way.
Yeah, we'll forgive him. Tucker Conley says, "I just saw Doctor Strange and I liked it mostly because of the visuals, but why was Strange's girlfriend such a plot device?" Or just a plot device.
Yeah.
Because it's a Marvel movie. I know the answer to this. I mean, I haven't seen the film, but I'm confident in that answer.
It's so funny because there was this person on Twitter who got really annoyed with us because I just Benedict Cumberbatch because I don't want him to play Dumbledore. and I mean, look, this is no offense to Benedict Cumberbatch, first of all, because I actually thought he was really good in this film. But yeah, I mean, look, this is another perfect example of Marvel's love interest trope that they perpetuate over and over and over again. And I have no problem with, you know, Marvel and people, you know, loving Marvel, and that's all great. But this is something that they have done in almost every single one of their movies. And the actress is great and the character isn't bad. Like, she's actually pretty funny in the stuff she gets to do. She's just a typical background love interest.
I think
there for the male character's use, you know?
I think that people also, like, they, because, like, she pushes back, they assume that, like, that means that she's, like, she's done more as a character. But if you take that out, like, it's not enough, basically, is what we're saying. Like, it would be nice if, like, she were more well-rounded. And unfortunately, of course, like I think women especially are always, like, subject to time restrictions in movies. And so, like, they always kind of get the short end of the stick, especially in Marvel movies, especially if your cast is a love interest.
At the end of the day, you know, and this isn't the only, by the way, like the factor involved, but if you can take a character and lift them out of the movie and it making no difference to the overall plot. I mean, obviously, yeah, she did bring him back to life and stuff, but they could easily have written another way around that. They could have found another doctor to do that, et cetera, et cetera. Like, if she actually has no real purpose in the plot that couldn't easily be replaced with someone else, it's not a very good use of that character, and it does in a sense become relegated to, like, there for the male leads personal feeling, whatever, you know, and that's very unfortunate.
Yeah. I still haven't seen that film. Anyway, back on Twitter, Rachel says, was it hype that recommended Lily Evans in the 11th hour? If so, thanks. I squeed watching it and want more. Did we recommend that?
We didn't, but a listener did.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, it's actually
helping each other out.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. I think there's like 8 parts or something. I've only seen a couple of like parts, but yeah, it's really cute. Highly recommend. Mm-hmm. Looking for some Marauder stuff.
Yeah. So back to Dumbledore casting reactions to our discussion last week. H21 Triple says, agreeing with Pam, I like the idea of Jeremy Irons as Dumbledore. It's not the first time he's entered the magical universe. And he links to this video from a comic relief special in which he plays Snape, which is absolutely hysterical. But he says, but Alex Blahos also fits with Dumbledore's description of soul-piercing shades of blue twinkled with kindness and mischief. Just so you know, Alex Lajos was kind of a joke because he's way, way, way too young for this. But I'm glad you agree.
Yeah, but you know what? If they want to put him in flashbacks, we won't say no.
Yeah, so... I would love that.
Angie says, I've completely failed at watching any new TV this season. I have rewatched seasons 6 and 7 of Gilmore Girls, though. Blame it on hype. You're welcome, Angie. No regrets.
And there's a very long season 7 special coming your way.
So a final Twitter. We do have time for this. So Merrima, if you tackle this one.
Sure. This is from Bobby, who says, been busy with election stuff, but have you read this article before? The basic gist is that they were screwed either way. You guys really fight for equality/diversity, and I love it. But this seemed more about not pissing anybody off politically and making money, mostly making money. And this is about Doctor Strange. And the article is on Cinema Blend. It's titled "The Blunt Yet Difficult Reason Doctor Strange's Ancient One Isn't Asian." I have not had a chance to read this yet, but look, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with it because,
a quote here that I don't know if you, I can tackle it. And I feel like Merrima, actually you and I were involved with but anyway, like after I read this quote, you can maybe reference that discussion we had on Twitter,
sure.
Because I feel like that captured pretty much the point of this. But, in the Cinema Blend article, writer C. Robert Cargill was asked about the choice to quote-unquote whitewash the role of the Ancient One by casting a white actress. And he said, and I quote, "The Ancient One was a racist stereotype who comes from a religion of the world that is in a very weird political place. He originates from Tibet. So if you acknowledge that Tibet is a place... and that he's Tibetan, you risk alienating 1 billion people who think that's bullshit and risk the Chinese government going, hey, you know, one of the biggest film watching countries in the world, we're not going to show your movie because you decided to get political. If we decided to go the other way and cater to China in particular and have him be in Tibet, if you think it's a good idea to cast a Chinese actress as a Tibetan character, you are out of your damn fool mind and have no idea what the F you're talking about." So in that sense, they kind of take it away from the specific white versus Asian, and they go into the Tibetan part of it, which I definitely see his point, but I also think it's a little bit hypocritical to go into this discussion basically acknowledging that Marvel is making this decision to erase basically the existence of Tibet to make money and say that then we can't be upset about that, first of all. And also... the story, they still went to China instead of Tibet. Like, once they'd made that choice, you also can't excuse the decision you made by saying, oh, well, we couldn't cast a Tibetan actor. What would have happened if we cast a Chinese actor? Well, I don't know. What happened when you set your movie in China instead of Tibet? Like, you didn't actually make a good thing. You just catered to China, basically.
Yeah, this is, just to... copy this guy's language, this is like a bullshit argument, and I completely disagree with this. The whole argument of like, oh well, they had no choice because like they, you know, can't annoy China because they have to make money in China. I mean, first of all, like Marvel is not short on money, but like, okay, sure, if you accept their premise of being like they have to make a film that's acceptable in China, like that's one issue. The other issue is like the way that they coded Tilda Swinton as, and again, just to be very clear, I have not seen this movie. I have watched all the trailers and like followed this discussion very closely because I've been very interested in it, but I have no desire to watch this movie whatsoever. Not a big fan of Benedict Cumberbatch, not a big fan of Doctor Strange, not a big fan of overt racism. So here we are. The decision that they made, which you see in all the promotional material, which you see in the trailer incredibly overtly, is to code the character as quote-unquote Asian by dressing her in like particular styles of clothing, by the set design that they use. You know, all of this stuff is meant to be like, it's like this is an Asian role. You know, this is an Asian character and this is a white woman playing it. And all of these other like, what is now this kind of retconning of it to be a kind of financial / political thing is just Marvel's way of like attempting to cover themselves because they have no history of like acknowledging these issues. They have no history of attempting to do better. When the casting was announced, they were basically like, oh no, we're doing something really interesting and like you'll see. And despite like the huge backlash against this, never acknowledged that that was a reasonable thing. And I would just defer to there was a really great tweet series from Yulin Kwong, who's a Chinese American director who we have talked about before because she directed that amazing little Harry Potter like Wizard Rock film, I Ship It, which I know we've talked about on Hype before, but Yulin was just tweeting about this and about like why it's offensive to her, and also made the great point of being like, if you're not creative or intelligent enough to find a way to like address all of these obstacles, like for example the Tibet and China issue, and you know, the way to update what was, I mean, Doctor Strange, the comics are very racist, so you have to do some updating regardless. But if you're not smart enough to do that, then you shouldn't be getting the like millions of dollars that you're being paid to do that, which is your job. So that's right. An act of a person who is like basically not, I mean, I'm extrapolating from her, but that's basically like, you're not qualified to be doing this. Like it's not a charity. You're getting paid a lot of money. Like this is what you do and you should be able to write a way around this and cast away around this that is not incredibly offensive to like a huge number of people just because, and then hide behind this thing of like, oh, but I mean, we can't annoy China because like that would be a bad thing. So yeah, sorry, Bobby, like I don't buy this article at all in the slightest.
But no, and I think at the end of the day it comes down to, you know, you can't try to ignore, like your argument for avoiding racism can't be to erase the Asian characters from your story,
right?
Like that's ridiculous. Right. That arguments hold no water in any way. And I'm also just very upset about the whole Tibet thing, but that's another discussion for another time. But I will just, I mean, obviously, me and Pam have both talked about Doctor Strange. We've both seen it. I think we both, first of all, thought that Tilda Swinton, she does a great job. Like it's such a, like it's not a, you know, whatever. It wasn't a part that she should ever have played. Doesn't negate from the fact that she's a good actress and she did a good job. It's just that that's not really part of the equation here.
Yeah.
And also Benedict Cumberbatch actually does a really good job. Like that's not what we're talking about here. And I feel like we can acknowledge that while still saying this is a thing. This is a whole other, much more important discussion than whether someone is a good actor or not. And again, your solution when you are leading, like Merrima said, when you're leading this huge blockbuster and your, you know, your best bet for trying to avoid racism or stereotyping is to take the minority characters out of your story. I don't know. I don't even know what to say. I think that's such a weird,
it's also like the coward's way out.
Yeah, entirely. Yeah. And you also can't ignore, in a situation like this, like you really can't ignore the context of where this is happening. Like Hollywood aside, this is happening with a studio that has a documented history of like failure to represent minority and marginalized peoples, and has like been on the receiving end of a huge amount of criticism for it and still has done nothing to address that. And in fact, I mean, oh, sorry, Black Panther is coming at some point. And, like, you know, I can't wait for Doctor Strange 2 to bump back Captain Marvel again. Like, that'll be great. But yeah. But has really done nothing to demonstrate that they understand that this is a problem that they need to address and they need to do better on. So, yeah, this is just, yeah.
Well, on that happy note, thank you so much.
Wait. We have a happier note to end on. We have an iTunes review.
Oh.
Do we really? We do. What a wonderful surprise.
I know. Get this, guys. This is from E/LM, who rated us 5 stars, which was so lovely, and also said, I look forward to this every week. One of the few podcasts that skips to the top of my up next queue. Hypeable's Hype is my go-to for pop culture and fandom news. The hosts seem like genuine fans, and I always look forward to hearing their opinions about upcoming projects. They also make a good point to discuss diversity and representation, which is an important issue when deciding what media we consume. Thanks for the great work, guys.
We did not plan that.
Oh my god, that's so lovely.
No, we didn't.
Thank you very much, E/LM.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. And thank you guys. Like, we've noticed, you know, we try not to ask too much, but we do ask occasionally that you leave us, 5-star iTunes reviews, because it's pretty much like our main way of getting ahead on iTunes and finding new listeners. So we really appreciate that you actually take the time to do this for us. That we're so thankful. Thank you so much. You can also contact us in a number of other ways if you want to leave your thoughts on anything we talked about this week. If you have, well, I guess, you know, Gilmore Girls and Fantastic Beasts are already coming out, but we have a lot more coming. So just keep sending us your feedback and send us your thoughts on the Gilmore Girls revival too. But make sure you label it spoiler free, because surprise, one of us might stay spoiler free for a while. So we'll talk about more about that on the season 7 special. You can do that either by emailing us hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr at hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And of course, you can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com, in the podcast section. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful week, everyone. Enjoy the multitude of specials that'll be coming your way this week. And yeah, we'll talk to you soon. My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
And I'm Marima.
Bye, guys.
Bye.